Hey, food friends, and welcome to the Food Founders Podcast, your number one spot to get mentoring, guidance, and behind the scene learnings to help you understand what it really takes to launch, grow, and scale your packaged food or beverage business. On the show, you'll hear from food founders at various stages of growth, and you'll hear from me and my 14 years of packaged food and beverage experience. Each episode is packed with insights, inspiration, and learning to help you on your food business journey. I'm your host, Ainsley, and this is the Food Founders Podcast. Jump into today's show, I want to thank our sponsor, the Food Brands That Sell program. Food Brands That Sell is a six-week deep dive into the CPG industry and teaches you how to win within that industry by creating a brand that you, retailers, and consumers love. Here's what a recent alumni had to say about the program. I am so grateful that I chose to do Food Brands That Sell. I learned so much about myself, my journey, and my company. These 6 weeks changed how I'm doing my business, and I can see the difference already. I no longer feel alone. If you aren't already on the waitlist, hop on over to foodbrandsthatsellwaitlist.com or grab the link below to make sure that you are first to know when the program is accepting new students. All right, let's dive into today's episode.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Food Founders Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Marilyn Yang from Papadelics, and we're going to be talking about a new product out there that you may have heard of, you may have been curious about. This is a type of product that might catch some people by surprise, and also some people are probably out there being like, yes, finally, why hasn't this existed before? We are talking about mushroom chips. Mushrooms have been incredibly hot the past few years, and chips have been hot forever. So in a way, this makes so much sense. So Marilyn, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here and for you to dive in and share more about Papadelics.
Yeah, thanks, Kenny. I'm excited to be here.
Can you open it up and just let us know a little bit more about Papadelics? How did you come to be? How did you land on mushroom chips?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it was like many CPG founders, that's very much so a COVID story. Starting from the beginning, I co-founded a business with my husband actually during the depths of the lockdowns back in 2020. We were based in New York City at the time. And just to give you a bit of background about us, we don't come from the food world, but we are big foodies, lifelong foodies, lifelong mushroom lovers. We come from finance backgrounds by way of trade and careers, but again, never thought those two things or all those things would combine to come to this. But it was as simple as us just being sick and tired of eating the same stuff during lockdowns, as you can imagine, especially being in New York City. There wasn't much variety when it came to cooking or food, or especially not being able to eat out, since that's typically a big thing that you do if you're in New York City. And so it really just was as simple as we started to see a lot of other mushroom products out there. So mushroom coffees and teas, which I guess at the time struck us as being funny because we're lifelong mushroom lovers, and actually, both of us, I think, were probably made fun of by our friends for liking mushrooms. It just like wasn't really a thing until recently. And so I think it struck us because it's like, oh, okay, we're finally not weird. We have validation. People actually care. And I think that was in the back of our heads. And that combined with us seeing other sorts of kind of better for you snacks out there, we just figured that mushroom chips existed already. Like, I don't even think we really had an MO at that point. We were just like, okay, we're bored of eating kale chips. Let's see if we can find a cool mushroom chip out there. Because it just didn't seem that out there to us. And I think we were quickly surprised to find that they really didn't exist. There are mushroom chips out there. If you really look, you had to go pretty deep into the depths of whether it's Amazon or online or wherever. Definitely wasn't something we could find in stores, really. And they were all unbranded, unflavored, unexciting. Mostly were foreign imports. So nothing wrong with that, of course, but they just weren't necessarily the flavor profiles we were looking for. And I think that was like an aha moment for us. Like we saw that there was a clear white space in this, what we felt like was a pretty, not weird, at least a not weird product category. Like we thought it should exist. And on top of that, they're not, definitely not being like a branded hip product, more catered to a Western audience in the category. But I think what ultimately put us over the edge in going at it was the fact that we saw that macro trend. Like we really saw that even from before we started the company, that people were more and more interested in mushroom products. And we felt like the timing was just right. So clearly we couldn't have been the only ones who were thinking that something like this should exist already. And so we felt like, on top of us maybe being a first mover, really, and at least the conceptualization of this type of product that we were thinking could be a really interesting combination. And maybe finally the nail in the coffin was us being bored during COVID. And so I think that's what really put us over the edge and made a go at it. So we incorporated, I guess it would have been the summer of 2020. But as you can imagine, not coming from the space, and this was during COVID, so as you can imagine, like, sourcing and production was all really crazy. We didn't actually launch until April of 22. So although I feel like our journey is almost going on 4 years now, which is crazy, the product's only actually been out there for a year and a half. So in a lot of ways, it's still very early for us and a lot of exciting things going on. And so pretty much been nonstop ever since April of 22. I feel like a year's worth of stuff happens every month.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that story. I love how you saw this macro piece. You realized that there was a white space in the market for a proper branded product like that, that met the Western taste buds, and you went at it. And thank you for sharing also that it was a 4-year journey to where you are right now. It was a 2-year journey until you actually launched. I think a lot of times people think that it's like an overnight piece. I have an idea. Bang, this is going to be in Whole Foods next week, right? At least next year. And you know that is just not the case. How did you manage the fact that this maybe was taking, it took 2 years to bring to market? I think a lot of people maybe would have lost that passion during that point, may have questioned if they should continue keep going with this, especially as the world started opening up again. Talk to me about how you guys managed to continue to push through with that and keep the passion alive for this idea.
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like when we reflect on it, it's almost good that we didn't come from the industry, because I don't think we had any sort of concept of how long it would take. And I think we recognize our own limitations too. Like, we aren't food scientists ourselves. And so this was something where we knew we had to learn a lot on the fly. We had to engage a lot of outside help on. Like, we just went into it already knowing it just wouldn't be an overnight thing just because of that alone. On top of COVID being on top of that. And so because of that, I feel like because we had zero expectations of how long things would take, I don't know if we even really had a sense of if things were taking long or if things were going quickly or whatever. And I think that was to our benefit, because I feel like we just took things as they came and rolled with it, because we didn't have those preconceived notions of how long things should have taken. And I think what was really interesting is that even after the fact, and now that we're finally, our products are finally out there, as we've spoken to other people in the industry and other founders, even COVID aside, it seems like our timeline from just first thinking up of the product and then actually finally launching it actually doesn't seem that long, even in the scheme of COVID as well. So I think if anything, reflecting back on it, maybe that's a testament to just how excited and passionate we were about the idea, because we were able to push through what even in normal times would have been a pretty aggressive timeline. But I guess what was funny on top of that is that we just didn't even know that was the case. I think we just took it day by day, and buyers kept on coming up and we just put them out as they came. And we had to shift a lot too. I think a lot of the early stuff we tested or thought about didn't necessarily work. Obviously, especially with a food product, you're trying a lot of different things just to see what sticks or tastes best. And a lot of stuff doesn't work or is too expensive to make work. And I think we were really focused too on making a product that was financially made sense to produce and also wasn't at like an accessible price point for the customer. And so I think it was just like an open-mindedness too, that I think at any point of the process, we probably could have gotten stuck if we were just not willing to compromise on something. And I'm not talking about quality or anything. I think it's more like we didn't stop if we had to go with a distributor that maybe wasn't located, distributor for an ingredient that wasn't located like right next to our production facility. Like, we were okay to cobble together what made the most sense for our product, but also actually was able to be sourced. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was a combination of a lot of different things that I guess made it such that I guess to us, it didn't seem that long. At the same time, during it seemed like certain things took, I guess it was almost the opposite. Like, what we thought would take a long time didn't. And what we didn't think would take a lot of time actually took a lot of time. And so because of that, it was just like so much going on that you just have to keep moving forward.
What were some of the pieces that caught you by surprise there in terms of you thought would be really short that actually took a long time and vice versa?
that you thought would take a long time, but you guys were able to work through it rather quickly?
Yeah, I think actually the thing that happened the quickest that we weren't expecting is actually getting the, like, how the product, or getting the product, like, conceptualized. Like, we thought it would just be more complicated than I guess it ended up being to produce a crunchy mushroom that's the whole cap, because I think it was important for us to have it be the whole cap, since it, we think, for a lot of reasons, but mainly it's a signal to people that we're not mixing it with other stuff, because a lot of the veggie chips out there, it's not just that vegetable, right? It's the vegetable plus like cornmeal or something like that. And so I think we really wanted to signal that it truly is just the mushroom. And so we actually thought like stuff like that would be difficult to do, or like it would be difficult to get crispy or shelf stable or whatever. But I think we were fortunate. We were able to engage with an R&D group out of Brooklyn at the time, and they did a great job, I think, just taking the idea. And I think within even less than a month, I think, of starting to work with them, we started getting samples and they gave us ideas of how you can do this. And I think that took much quicker than we thought it would, because we thought we would have to be creating something from scratch. Mm. And then, or that it would just be really hard to do from like a food science standpoint, but it ended up actually not. And I think the one thing that took longer, or it was more like logistical hurdles, and I think this was one of the things that COVID just made a bit harder, was actually getting started with our co-packer. So I think all sourcing of new co-packers has its own struggles, but I think in our case, we were first-time founders. We were looking for them to do something during COVID when they already were short-staffed or had production issues. I think it was just a combination of a lot of different moving pieces on their end as well. Right. I think understandably so. I think they're typically hesitant. Co-packers are a lot of times hesitant to take on new customers, right, for a lot of different reasons. And so I think even when we identified the group that we're using even still today, we have a great relationship with them now. But I think it took a lot for us to demonstrate to them that we were serious, because I get it. I think from their perspective, I'm sure they get tons of inbounds all the time. And it was one of those situations where we were able to get them to commit to a trial date initially, but I think from the initial date we set to the date we actually ended up doing it, it might have been like a 6-month difference. And there was a lot of reasons that went into that. But I think those types of delays, I think were just things that we weren't thinking would happen as drastically as they did. But again, I feel like that was maybe a bit more COVID driven.
And how did you convince them that your brand to be taken seriously? Because yeah, you're right. Co-packers get calls all the time and people talking about different products, and it is hard to get the new brand taken seriously sometimes. What were some of the things that you and your husband did that were able to get them on board with seeing that, no, this is something serious. We are really taking this serious. We want you to be a serious partner with us.
I think this is a story I tell a lot, actually. And it was one of the biggest risks we had to take. And part of it was because we were just like moving forward. We were just like, okay, it's going to happen. But basically between engaging with our co-packer, we've also secured our supply of ingredients at the same time. And what happened is we thought that everything was all set with the co-packer. So we already ordered a ton of ingredients. And so it was a situation where the co-packer kept on wanting to push back the date, but our suppliers weren't able to hold on to the ingredients anymore. Like, they needed it to deliver it somewhere. And so it was a question of, okay, can we start sending you guys? I know we're still working on the agreement, but can we start to send you guys ingredients? And then we kept on getting maybe like wishy-washy answers, when at a certain point, I think we just decided to put our foot down and say, okay, we're just sending you stuff. We have ingredients coming. They're going to arrive on this date, and you have to tell us right now if you can't receive it. And I think that was what I think really forced them to take us seriously, because I think they recognized that this was significant dollar investment for us to have bought this inventory, and here it is showing up. So it's not just us saying that we bought it, it's actually here.
You guys were able to really show them, no, this is actually coming, and we really need you to make this now.
Exactly. Yeah, these ingredients are real. It's literally going to show up on your door like next week. And if you can't take us on, then you have to let us know right now, or else we don't know where else to send it.
Right.
It was even at one point we were thinking like, okay, worst case, can we send this to our parents' house? Can they take like all? It was like probably like 10 pallets of random stuff. We were just like trying to figure out, okay, worst case, if they say no, like where the heck are we going to ship this stuff? Because it was literally to the point where our ingredient suppliers, like they couldn't hold it in their own warehouses anymore. Like they needed to send it somewhere. So it was a pretty crazy time.
But it all worked out.
It did. Yeah. It's one of those things where looking back on it, it's, oh, that's, you know, there's one of those fun startup challenges that we just went through. But
yeah, absolutely. And did you have your orders already set? So you had the ingredients, we'd already purchased our ingredients. We had a co-packer that we wanted to go with. Okay, great. We're going to make this big production run. Did you already have accounts that this product was going to be listed into, or were you making it? And then you're like, okay, now I need to go and sell it. What did that look like for you guys?
Yeah, and actually, funny you bring that up. I feel like we were actually just going maybe a few steps back. So the way our product is made is such that we had to essentially skip the step. I feel like a lot of brands go through a step where they maybe go through a phase where they're making their product out of the test kitchen. They can do small batches, et cetera. As you maybe got the sense, we never had that. And part of it was, I think, just because we didn't want to compromise on, for example, the crunchiness of our product, the quality of our product. And so because of that, the way our product is processed and the way we had to source our ingredients, there was no way to do it at a small scale. We had to jump right off the bat into large scale, or not huge, relatively large scale production and co-packing. And so I feel like it was a blessing and a curse, I think, because it was a worst case. We always joked if we get stuck with all this product, at least we have stacks for the rest of our lives, or at least for the rest of the year that we can eat. Because at least at that point, we knew we liked it. So it's okay, worst case, we're just going to have a lifetime supply of our snacks. And it was fun to have tried it or whatever. And so we went into it with the mentality that, yes, it would have been a big upfront investment for us to invest in this such a large run right off the bat. But if it works out, though, we're already well positioned to be able to produce. Because I think we went into it, again, with making sure that the financial situation of the product made sense longer term as well, which is why we started sourcing in the way we did. And I think it almost forced us to be very quick when it came to finally selling our product and to be very aggressive in the market, because we had a fire under us, right? We essentially were making a ton of product right away that we needed to sell right away, basically. And yeah, so I think that really forced us to right off the bat explore literally every channel, turn over every rock. And mind you, too, this whole time, it's just the two of us, right? And even now, it's just the two of us. Not to say we don't work with outsourced resources and agencies and like that, stuff like that. But we don't have any employees still, which is what's crazy about all of this. But yeah, so it really forced us, I think, to be, again, very aggressive in that market right off the bat.
And what channels ended up being the main channels of success for you guys?
Yeah, so early on, we actually weren't sure if we would be, again, we started working on this during COVID. So I think the paradigm of like in-store just was a bit iffy at the time, because we weren't sure if by the time we launched, the world would be back to normal or stores would be back to how they used, or people were going to stores anymore. I think there was a lot of uncertainty with the time we were conceptualizing the product too. So initially when we were working on it, we thought we would be more online focused than we ended up being, just because that was just the reality of that time. Like most stores, just social distancing, you couldn't do demos, a lot of people weren't shopping in stores for various reasons. And it was just a very different from when we were first working on the product to when we actually had the product on hand, because by April 22, things were pretty much back. Maybe not fully, but things were back to the swing of things. And because of that, though, by the time we launched, so April of 22, all the trade shows started coming back. And we right away went to Summer Fancy Food Show in June of 22. And I think it was there that we really solidified that, okay, if we want to be able, and again, mind you, we had like that fire under us, right? We had to sell we didn't have to just sell our product, right? We had to get to pretty large volumes pretty quickly. And so I think we quickly recognized that retail was probably the quickest and probably most meaningful way to do that without a lot of money behind us, because we didn't have millions of dollars to test with social media ads or whatever. And so we decided to right away hit up some trade shows, the first of which was Summer Fancy Food Show. And I think what solidified both the idea to us in terms of like proof of our initial thesis, but also allowed us to feel confident doubling down at retail, was some of those early lucky breaks we had at the show. I call them lucky breaks, but I would say they're probably practically more just maybe confirmations, early confirmations of our initial thesis that it was if we build it, people would come because we just felt like the timing was so right for something like our product. And on top of that, nothing else like it existing already. But it was there where some of our earliest accounts at that very show we met. So it was actually the first, it was actually where we got Urban Outfitters. It was where we got Foxtrot Market, which was our first chain that we were carried in. And I think those were just some big early wins that, again, solidified our initial thesis, but also made us confirm to us that retail was the way to go if we really wanted to go at it quickly. And I think it's really continued ever since then, because I think, you know, we started going to more trade shows and we started meeting the same people over and over again. And I think we started getting some industry awards as well. I think a lot of validation that we were in the right time and place with the right type of product as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's amazing. I love that you guys just jumped right in. It's funny how sometimes when you just have the fire under you, you got to make it happen. So you make it happen.
Yeah, no, we just had to make it happen. We're still trying to make it happen. Right. But yeah, it's just one of those things we were forced to, both financially, but just practically. Same issue, right? We don't sell this. Like, where the heck are we going to keep it? Or just going to have my parents' garage or become completely converted into a warehouse or something. But but yeah, it's funny when you're like forced or put under a gun to do something. You just have to do it.
And then how have people, like the consumers, heard about you? How do they continue to hear about you? You mentioned some industry awards. How are you getting consumers to know about this product, try it, and take the plunge to try out a mushroom chip?
We do a lot of guerrilla type stuff. So a lot of boots on the ground. I think at the end of the day, people just need to try it. And so another thing that we started doing a lot of very early on is any sort of like in-person selling event that we could get to ourselves, especially like the two of us, we just did it. So in the early days, we did every vegan festival in particular. I think vegan festivals were where we found like our earliest fans and also the people who I think were just already primed for a product like ours. And so I feel like that's where we found a lot of our earliest support networks. We started to meet a lot of the other people in the industry through those types of events. I think those were super valuable for us early on, because I think between the two of us in those first few months, we spoke to thousands of customers, like just one-on-one. And actually, it was there that doing this that also solidified, I think, us really focusing on retail, because the number one thing that came out of people when they would try our product and liked it and bought it is, where can I find this in store? I think it was like an aha moment for us that as much as people are shopping online, like when it comes to certain product categories, maybe like grocery or whatever, people still have a routine of going to the store. And so people just want to grab it when they're doing their weekly rounds or whatever. And so I think it was almost like we didn't take tally necessarily, but thinking back, it had to have been 80 to 90% of people that the first thing out of their mouths was like, this is amazing. Like, where can I find this in store? Like they almost like at some level didn't care if you can order it online or not.
Yeah, that's interesting. Even though consumers' behaviors have shifted, it's like they're still going to grocery stores, right? They still want to be able to throw it in their bag. And your brand does very much look like a DTC brand. However, they're still going to grocery stores, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like it was another just like a practical where we were at personally, right? We didn't have the funds to be testing different online advertising strategies and not being 100% sure if their ROI would come back, on top of us just needing to sell at large volumes right away. Because even if you're able to tap the D2C, it can take a lot of time and investment to get to higher volumes. And I think even over time, as we started to get into stores, I think what we found almost is, because we did become truly omnichannel, I think what we found was really interesting is if we would have a random store pop-up, I'm making this up. Actually, if this is a random example. We had a store pop-up in Nebraska that carried our product. It was like an independent natural food store. And then all of a sudden, we had an noticeable uptick in orders from people in Nebraska ordering the product online. And it was just one of those kind of another one of those aha moments for us where it's practical and makes sense. Even me as a consumer, I do it too, where I feel like our product being on shelf is advertising in and of itself. So even if someone doesn't buy it immediately on store, if they then come and we do a lot of like organic stuff on social media. So then they see us on TikTok or Instagram or whatever. It's, oh, yeah, I saw this on the shelf of XYZ store. Like, it's really interesting. Or they might be hesitant to buy like a multi-pack online right away, but then they buy like just one bag at the store and they really like it. And then they go back to our website and buy the multi-pack. If we still have a better deal on the multi-pack than if we can get an individual pack in store. And so all these like practical things that make a lot of sense when you think about it. But I feel like for us, we saw that happening. It was like the proof that we needed to double down.
And I have to ask, how did two people with a finance background, finance mindset, how did you approach the financials behind this? And are you guys both still in finance or are you both full-time in Papadelics now?
Yeah, we both actually in different ways, but we both still do our work in finance. That is partly how we fund the business as well. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting because I feel like we had to have a balance of both, right? Because coming from finance, we're very financially conservative in the sense that we don't want to, you know, waste money if the ROI isn't there. We don't have proof that the ROI is there. But at the same time, we were taking a risk in general with even doing what we were doing. So we had some level of risk tolerance. And I feel we joke, right? We're not fully finance people, but we're not fully CPG people either. And I think that's what it took for us to have done it the way we did. Because again, we weren't fully finance people because we were still willing to take some level of risk in terms of some level of upfront investment without a guarantee of an ROI in certain things that we did. But we also weren't fully maybe traditional marketing focused CPG either, where we weren't just looking to throw money at something and hope it works. I think we still made very conscious type of decisions too, or I think it was more like if we saw that we would test something in a small way, if it didn't work, it just didn't work. And we cut it off right away and shifted those funds elsewhere. And so if anything, maybe at the end of the day, it was just like us being willing to test a lot of things very quickly early on. And then once we found something that worked, just doubled down and focused everything on it. And so we knew our resources were limited. And it's almost like we were hyper aware of that, right? Given our backgrounds, that we essentially just, once we found something that worked, we just stuck with it.
That makes a lot of sense. That's like a perfect balance there of the risk taking and the practicality of it, which I think you need to have, right?
Yeah. And I think too, again, I think we've made it almost because we were forced to go into co-packing right away. We right away, I think, had in our mind just making sure that whatever it was that we produced, the unit economics made sense. And I think that was like the benefit of us jumping straight into it that way, because we knew that if we were selling the volumes we needed to sell, the unit economics would make sense. And versus maybe if we started small, I don't know how much visibility would have had right off the bat to that. But I think because those were all things we were thinking about so early on, that it did give us the confidence to keep going too, because we just knew it was a volume game. We just needed to get the sales to a certain level to where it supported our level of production, basically.
And did you guys try to make it profitable from day one? I know that's a big piece in the CPG world. Do we make this profitable from day one? Do we not? How do we actually make that happen? From two financial background individuals, I'm curious, how did you guys approach that question?
Yeah, we definitely, that was our goal from day one. I don't think it's possible to do it literally from day one, but that was definitely our goal to do, to essentially get profitably as quickly as we could. And so I feel like it was a combination of a lot of different things, again, to where we had to jump straight into co-packing. So initially, the way we sourced our ingredients that we would produce, we knew the unit economics would work as long as we had the sell-through of what we were producing, right? So we knew that was true. I think on top of that, us consciously making the decision to self-fund everything, right? When it's your own money, I think you're a lot more careful with it. I think, and that kind of forced us to run super, super lean, right? Like we don't have any employees again. And we bootstrap everything. But I think it was a balance too, because there were certain things that we did invest quite a bit in. For example, our branding in particular, which I don't think we would have gotten where we were without us having done that. So that I think in our eyes, that was definitely a worthwhile thing to have done. But yeah, I think we went into it right away. It was that fire under us, right? Like we were producing at these large quantities. We knew that if we could get to the sell through we needed, it would be able to be profitable. And on top of that, we basically have no overhead. And so it really was just a sales game. And we're still working on it. I'm not saying we're there yet, but I think especially this year with a lot of big retail launches coming, I think that's almost like within the horizon now, which we're pretty excited about. But it was definitely like a long journey to get here. And we had to, in the meantime, I think, continue to invest quite a bit in the business.
And we have two questions. Number one, I feel like a lot of people are questioning why exactly does this taste like? Does this taste like a mushroom? That's always what people ask when anything is mushroom-based. Does it taste like a mushroom? Does it taste like a chip? Where does it fall on the taste profile for people?
It tastes like a crouton. So if you were to blindfold someone, this does not taste like a mushroom at all, basically. We have three flavors. They're all vegan, gluten-free. We're also non-GMO, Project Verified. And we do have a truffle-flavored chip. So we have a truffle parm. It's a vegan parm. That's our only mushroom tasting one. But again, we use shiitake mushrooms. It doesn't even taste like shiitakes. It tastes like truffle because we have...
Who doesn't love that?
Yeah, we have truffle as part of the flavor. We joke about that one because it's a mushroom-flavored mushroom. But again, like we have our other flavors, for example, red rosemary and salt. That's our most mild flavor. It quite literally tastes like an Italian crouton. A lot of people like using it as crouton. And then finally, our Thai chili flavor. It tastes like a hot Cheeto. But I think it's really more of a texture thing. I think people, it's really our product in particular, it's really one of those you have to try it to believe it. Because I feel like I could wax poetic about it, but people really just need to put it in their mouths to fully get it. And I know we didn't talk about it a ton, but I think that's why we do a ton of, again, boots on the ground type of demo, whether it's demos, being at community events, because at the end of the day, people just need to try it. And I think on top of that, like word of mouth. Really, I think once people try it, they're really so shocked, I think, at what they discover that they have to rave about it. And on top of that, the people who end up being the most passionate fans of our product, a lot of times are self-declared mushroom haters. Because I think as long as we're able to get them over the hump of actually trying our product, I feel like they're just so shocked. Like, how in the world can I actually like this? And so then they start raving about it a ton.
Amazing. You're mushroom converters, bringing people over to the mushroom side.
Yeah, that's our goal. Again, I think our number one goal with having initially creating our product was we wanted to make mushrooms more mainstream. I think you understand that there, I think a lot of people just haven't had them in the right way. It's probably the idea. And on top of that, especially in general here in the US and Canada, most people probably haven't had mushrooms beyond a white button mushroom / portobello mushroom. And so I feel like there's just a lot of education on top of that. But at the end of the day, people just want stuff that tastes good. They could care less what it actually, maybe even if they think they don't like mushrooms, a bit made of mushrooms, but it tastes good, I think they could get over that. And so I think at the end of the day, our big focus was on making a snack that tasted good, regardless of if you like mushrooms or not already.
I love that. And I love what you've done here. It makes so much sense. The name, everything is so on brand with everything. Go check them out, guys. It's a great brand. Great product. And I love what you're doing to introduce people to mushrooms and get mushroom lovers a new way to enjoy getting this incredibly beneficial product. For anyone who is like, oh, I need to go try some Papadelic mushrooms now, where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can check out all of our info on papadelics.com. So that's papadelics.com. We do have a store locator on there. We're in a lot of independent natural food stores in the U.S., although I guess most excitingly, we did recently launch in Sprouts Farmers Market. And so if you do have a Sprouts near you, be sure to check us out there.
Nice. Very exciting. And congrats on the recent Sprouts launch. That's very exciting for the brand.
Yeah, we're super excited too. I think it's the right demographic. And we're just super excited to, I think, be able to just reach more people in stores too. Because again, I think even online, we get tons of messages like, oh, where can I find a store near me?
Awesome. Marilyn, thank you so much for sharing the story and for everything that you're doing with Papadelics. I think you guys have something really great here. And you're a great example of how to bootstrap the business, how to bring a great idea to life, even though there are challenges. And like you said, maybe sometimes a little fire under you helps push things along. So thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. Great chatting.
That's it for this week, food friend. Thanks for tuning in. If the show helped you in any way, please go ahead and leave a rating or review of the show below. I also want to thank our sponsor one more time, the Food Brands That Sell program, the program to transform how you navigate the CPG industry and ultimately sets you up for success within it. Go ahead and get yourself on the waitlist using the link below, or you can put yourself on the waitlist at foodbrandsthatsellwaitlist.com. Catch you next time, food friend.